What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Welcome to The Felon Who Raised Me, a family crimes podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Crow, and this is my ADHD brainchild. I've wanted to write a book for many years that details my life, and I thought this might be a good place to start. I have many stories that I think are interesting and worth telling, particularly surrounding my narcissistic father. And yes, I know the word narcissist is a hot buzzword these days. But I feel confident in using that term, having had multiple therapists validate my experiences. And with the culmination of experiences of those I love, unfortunately, I do believe my father to be what I call a textbook narcissist. By that, I mean I experienced conditional love, black and white thinking, constant criticism, building myself up only to then tear it down as a manipulation tactic, etc. My father is currently incarcerated in federal prison. He is serving a 17-year sentence for bank fraud and money laundering and has been imprisoned since 2017. We have been estranged for a decade. And I think people assume that when family members are estranged, that that's it. You don't think about them or want anything to do with them. It's just a very final cut the cord type thing. And I don't think that could be further from the truth. Now, I'm not saying this is everyone. I don't want to speak for anyone but myself, but I do believe that as humans, our relationships are far more complex than that. And I know that for my father, I still have love for him, care, worry, sadness, and so many other emotions that I can hold space for while still firmly holding the boundary that it is within my best interest to not have him in my life. So I'd like to go back to the beginning and give everyone backstory and context of my father's life and the events that led to his crimes. I think it's really important to understand how a person gets to where they are, and it's been absolutely fascinating for me to research my father and read all of the newspaper articles he was featured in when I was a kid. I mean, he was such a prominent businessman in our tight-knit community of Frederick, Maryland for so many years. And when you're a kid, you just don't pay attention to what your parents are doing because you're so wrapped up in your own life. So it's been a wild and truly just fascinating journey for me, and I've uncovered some bombshells along the way. So let's go. This episode will be focused on my father's upbringing and young adult life. And you'll hear me refer to my dad by his first name, Mark, as well. I mostly call him Mark these days, but I refer to him as Mark, Dad, or, quote, my father, unquote, interchangeably, just FYI. My father, Mark Ian Gaver, was born on September 21st, 1961, in Atlanta, Georgia, to parents Jack Gaver and Frances Folly Gaver. The second of three children, he is the only boy of the three Gaver children. My grandfather, Jack, was enlisted in the United States Air Force, and so my father was a self-proclaimed army brat. They moved around extensively during my father's early childhood years, and he wasn't introduced to his hometown of Middletown, Maryland until he was about 12 years old. But this didn't bother him. Mark, very openly proud of his German heritage, boasted that his family even spent a year in Germany when he was a baby. As a child, I can remember my dad telling stories about living in New Mexico. When he was 7 or 8, he would catch lizards and drop them in my Mimi's laundry basket for her to find amongst the clean clothing. A surprise I'm sure she did not appreciate. I did not have a relationship with my grandfather, Jack, although it has been told to me that we met, and I did know him up until I was about 3 years old. Mark described his father, Jack, as a disinterested, absent father who couldn't be bothered by his son. According to my father, when he'd ask his dad to play, Jack would respond, "Go play in the street." My grandparents divorced in the mid to late 1970s when my father was a teenager. It was allegedly a very messy split and caused significant turmoil in the Gaber household. Mark and his older sister Kathy were grown and out of the house by this point, while his youngest sister Kelly was still living at home with my grandmother Frances. I had an amicable relationship with Fran for the entirety of my childhood, who you heard me call Mimi a little bit ago, up until my own parents' divorce. That's another story for another day. You'll probably hear me say that a lot throughout this podcast. There are so many side stories we could go on, and I'm sure we will. But anyway, going back to father figures, in terms of my father, in his teenage years, Mark's sports coaches would become his father figures and some of the most influential people in his young life. Around 1973, when my father was 12 years old, his family settled back down in Middletown Valley, Maryland, very close to where his mother and father grew up. My grandfather, Jack, retired from the Air Force and began working as a furniture salesman. Mark threw himself into Middletown High School sports, basketball, football, and track and field. He excelled at all of them. He was also an honor roll student, taking a particular interest in history that he would stay passionate about all of his life. Mark received several accolades for his sporting endeavors, including most running yards, a record that would not be broken until I was in high school in the early 2000s. And a record high jump of 6 feet 4 inches at the Frederick County All-Star Track and Field Meet. I thought that was really impressive because my dad is 5'11", so that actually really wowed me. But sports and academics weren't my father's only skill sets. He was also popular with the ladies. My dad started dating my mom when he was a junior and she was a sophomore. They had a very typical high school relationship full of date nights, school dances, and my mom cheering him on at games, literally. She was a cheerleader all throughout high school. They were a picturesque couple, and when Mark graduated from Middletown High School in 1979, they vowed to stay together. He was an up-and-coming person to watch, a young man with so much potential and the world at his feet. Mark had been accepted to Guilford College in South Carolina on a football scholarship. It was there that he met his good friend, Marcy Brown, who will become relevant later in this podcast, so remember that name. She was a year ahead of my father at Guilford, and according to Marcy, Mark was very kind to her at a time when she needed it most. My mom visited Mark for homecoming at Guilford with his family, although during their college years, they were on and off again. My mom attended college in a different state, so this isn't surprising. After his freshman year came to an end, my father made the decision to transfer to Shepherd College, now Shepherd University, in West Virginia. Because of its close proximity to his home in Middletown, Maryland, he was able to be a commuter student and live at home. I'm sure it also saved his parents money as well. Here's where my research got interesting. While my father has always maintained publicly that he obtained dual degrees in political science and finance from Shepherd College, although upon speaking to family members, it appears he told different people conflicting things. For example, he told my sister that he had a degree in history, while he told my mother that he had a dual degree in history and political science. Regardless, there is no record of him graduating from this school. Or any school for that matter. I could find no transcripts of his. He was omitted from the seniors in the 1983 Shepherd College yearbook. In fact, I can't find any record that he attended Shepherd at all. This blatant lie is the first in what will become an adult life full of deception for Mark. And the lie of him being a college graduate particularly bothers me because he used the tradition of going to college as something necessary in our household. And I felt an obligation to attend, although I had very little to no preparation or interest in college life after graduating from high school. This pressure was exacerbated by the fact that I'm the eldest child, and my father made the point repeatedly that he and my mother were both college graduates and he wanted the same for his children. It's a pretty big farce that now leaves me shaking my head for a couple of reasons. I scoff at the idea that the prestige of a college education was obviously so important to him. And he didn't seem to truly care about his children being happy. He cared more about our family image. That makes me incredibly sad for him because it's such an inauthentic way to live. But it is a theme that will carry on throughout our story. So while all of this is going on, my mom attending college for real, graduating in 1984, and my dad having quote-unquote graduated in 1983, they decide to get engaged and were ultimately married in December of 1984. My mom recalls of her wedding day, quote, "Mark was so nervous. He was sweating bullets and shaking in his boots. I thought he was just really nervous, but now looking back, I can't help but wonder if it was something else, something more secretive. Was he seeing someone else? Was he terrified to go through with it? I just don't know. It was really strange," end quote. To my mom, this was more than just your typical wedding day jitters. And according to her, my father had been the one to push for them to get married in the first place. My mom's parents did not like my dad either, especially my granddad. Mom told me that, quote, "Granddad was nasty to me during that time. He gave me a really hard time about marrying Mark. He even came to me at one point and said, 'I did some digging and I don't think he graduated from Shepherd.' And I'd had it at that point. I told him, 'You'll say anything to get me not to marry him. You need to back off.' And he did. From then on, my dad left it alone," end quote. And so the newlyweds rented a modest apartment in Jefferson, Maryland, a small suburb of Frederick. Mark worked in Rockville, Maryland at Mar Inc. When I went to their website to do my research, their about section left me with my jaw on the floor. It's like a blueprint for what Gaver Technologies, Inc. would become. On their website, it reads, quote, "Provider of technical and management services. The company provides systems, engineering and integration, information technology, cybersecurity, specialized facilities management and intelligence, and special programs to the United States Navy and other federal agencies," end quote. Wow. It's just so telling to me. This could be like where my father got the idea for GTI and what he wanted business to look like with him at the helm. So anyway, my parents would carpool to work because at the time they both worked in Rockville. And then 2 years later, in the spring of 1986, I was born. My parents always knew they wanted children, but they weren't prepared for the difficulty that a newborn can bring, especially the type of newborn that I happen to be. I was an extremely colicky baby who cried most of the time. My dad tells a super charming anecdote about when I was a baby, my mom would be out teaching aerobics class, so my dad was at home with me, screaming and crying to no avail, me, not him, although I'm sure he wanted to. He said he would put his head under the couch pillows and wait until my mom got home, then immediately hand me to her as soon as she walked in the door. That's so cute, huh? It's here that I already begin to see generational patterns repeating themselves. My father could not be bothered with me when it inconvenienced him. Something else about my infancy and toddlerhood that bothered my father so much is that he would tease me, quote unquote, about being a mama's girl. I was glued to my mom's hip and preferred her over my dad whenever I was given the choice. Now, I'm a parent to 3 children of my own, and I can tell you that this is extremely common and absolutely normal. And if you're a parent, you probably know this as well. Your baby and or toddler will have a preferred parent. It has nothing to do with you. His narcissism rears its ugly head in this moment, and I can so clearly see that me, a baby, rejecting him was taken personally by him, an adult. Mark's resentment for me began to grow almost instantly. I didn't really stand much of a chance in hindsight. My parents made the arrangement that my mother would stay home with me once they had children, which I am so grateful for because she was the most nurturing, affectionate, caring mom. In 1991, Mark was working as the VP of operations at West Winds Country Club in Newmarket, Maryland, which was close to where we lived. At the time, my parents owned a townhouse in Frederick where we lived until 1992. Mark was allegedly let go from West Winds Country Club, and while he was in between jobs, he did taxes for individuals and small businesses, although he wasn't a certified CPA. I don't really think that was a big time or a big deal, especially at the time in the early 90s. I can remember going with him to family friends' houses and playing with their kids while the adults sat at the kitchen table working. To be completely honest, I don't know what my father did for work in between 1992 and 1998 when he started GTI. According to various sources, he had a variety of office jobs, but I don't know that they ever lasted very long. As I got older, he once again painted my upbringing as this very destitute, quote unquote, we didn't have two nickels to rub together background, just as he had done with his nuclear family while he was growing up. I know I was a kid, but I mean, my sisters and I were always enrolled in a ton of extracurricular activities. We never lacked the opportunity to buy lunch at school or participate in extra clubs. We had a pool membership. I could go on. I very much question how, quote, poor, unquote, we were. It's so interesting to me that I don't really think about the fact that my father and I never had a close relationship until I see girlfriends of mine having close, positive relationships with their fathers. Even then, when I do see it, I don't find myself feeling a sense of longing or envy. What I truly, honestly feel is the ick. I just can't relate to it, and so I don't think I see the value in it. Of course, I have complex emotions relating to my relationship with my father, and of course, I love him. But the idea that a father and daughter have this close, healthy, almost buddy-buddy-like bond just confuses me. And that's how far removed I am from knowing that type of dad. One of the good things about having a narcissistic father, however, are you wondering where I'm going with this? is that he loves to talk about himself. So I feel like I really got to know who he is and was when he was younger. He told us a lot about his family, his experiences, history, the people in his life who wronged them, his successes, history, cautionary tales, life advice. Did I mention history? Everything was a history lesson with him. That was probably the most typical dad thing about him. You couldn't get a straight answer out of the man. Everything turned into a 20-minute lesson on World War II. He always said, quote, there are two kinds of music, country and Western, end quote. He championed the three of us girls, something I truly think he fought hard to do for us, and made the effort to break the generational cycle of emotional neglect. My favorite feminist phrase of his is, quote, girls can do anything boys can do except pee standing up. End quote. My dad taught me not to put up with anybody's shit, even though I put up with his shit for 18 years. And he protected me. Once at a community choir pool party, one of the boys kept touching my butt over my bathing suit when I was in line for the diving board. I told the boy to stop, and he kept doing it. The next thing I knew, my dad was hightailing it over to the diving board, pointed his finger at the boy, looked him dead in the eyes, and said, "She said stop. Don't touch her again." He was my hero that day. So, yeah, my dad did some fucked up things, and he did some really great things. Humans are complicated. All in all, my relationship with my dad was mostly positive up until I turned 18. We weren't close, but we were amicable. He was a lot of things. Silly and goofy, strict and intimidating, caring and affectionate. And it wasn't until my senior year of high school, which was in 2004, that I started seeing him in a different light. I began to think of him as someone who maybe didn't truly care about me and was only interested in buying my love. As an aside, I just want to validate my younger self and say that my gut instinct was not wrong. I am learning so much through my research about Mark's fraud and when it truly started. And he cared, I have an all caps in my notes, so much about money in 2004. I'll go much further into detail about this on next week's episode. Anyway, when I was 18, I had suspected that my dad had been catfishing me online. His AIM screen name was Dad Sees You, which was not a surprise. Like, I knew that was his screen name, but isn't that so creepy? And those suspicions were confirmed the day after I'd posted a LiveJournal entry. Remember LiveJournal? Where I mentioned that I thought he was trying to buy my love. And the next morning, he burst into my room screaming at me that, quote, "If you think I'm just trying to buy your love, you can go to hell," unquote, and took away my debit card, which, now that I think back, is illegal. Like, what are you doing? I was over 18. It was the first experience I'd ever had of his true rageful tendencies, and it changed everything. But before we go further into our father-daughter dynamic, I want to spend next week focusing on Gaver Technologies Incorporated, the business Mark started in 1998, his bread and butter, his greatest accomplishment, and ultimately, his demise.
If you liked this episode of The Felon Who Raised Me, please share it with your friends, especially if you're local to Frederick, Maryland. I'd love for this podcast to reach people back in my hometown because I think you all, as a community, deserve this story. You were deceived too. You can help spread the word by giving The Felon Who Raised Me a 5-star rating and review. Follow me on your podcast feed so you don't miss an episode. I'll be back next week with episode 2, Gaver Technologies Incorporated / The Golden Boy of Frederick. Thank you so much for your support. Take care of yourself and remember, families are complicated. Give yourself grace, set healthy boundaries, and choose people who choose you. Love you guys. Bye.